Welcome to Semi Homemade. I'm Sandra Lee. Let's get cooking. Great, long, thick, 9-inch cock. I want you to take it. Oh, yes. So what I want to do is lay down on the counter. You're going to need to roll your sleeves up, and this is the fun part. You're going to have to get your hands in here, and I love it. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Be careful of the splatters. Juice. Cocktail time. Vanilla vodka. This already has vodka in it. I'm Sandra Lee. I hope you have a great day. Bye-bye.
Hey kids, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. It feels like it's been a really long time since I've done a show, and I apologize for the layoff. I think we got one show in August, and I have no excuses other than to say that when family calls, you have to drop everything. And this time, I really had to drop everything. So I'm sorry for the delay, but we're back on track, and there's a buttload of things to discuss, so we're going to be doing a lot of shows in the coming month, and I'll definitely make up for not being here. Today, I'm recapping our trip to Ludo Bites, which we attended thanks to Peter and Joe from MyLastBite.com, and I think I said on the last show that Ludo had at some point become Joe's new chef crush, and she ended up visiting Ludo at the bread bar something like 4 times in a 6-week stretch or something like that. The bazaar is like so last spring with Joe, you know? Now she's on to this. And listen, I'm just breaking balls because it's not like that. But it was pretty unique. This experience that we had was really unique. So we're going to be talking about that. But what I wanted to talk about first is this beer that I had recently. And before we get into the rest of the show, I want to discuss this. Last weekend, we were graced with dinner company in the form of Peter and Joe, Joe's sister Janet and her husband Paul, Ray and Afaf, who you all know from simplyheavenfood.com, where food, where flavor kind of just oozes out of the screen when you go to that site, and our friends John and David. The dinner party is a whole story in and of itself, and I'll talk about that at some point. But the gifts that Ray and Afaf bought me hit me square in the taste buds. They brought gifts, and not just any gifts. And, you know, they didn't have to bring anything, but these were extremely special. Ray hands me this box. All right, it's made of leather. It looks like a leather version of a pirate's locker that's filled with booty. No, seriously, it's like Davy's locker. Very manly looking box. So anyway, I opened it, and they purchased 3 really impressive craft beers for me. And I was just floored. Ale Smith's Wee Heavy, which I absolutely love. Mean Time's London Porter, which I've never tasted before, but I've seen it, and I've read a lot about it on Rate Beer. And Rogue's Old Crustacean Barley Wine from the XS series. Now, I've never tasted this beer before either, so I was eager to try it, and I had company over, so I knew I could share it with somebody, because I certainly couldn't drink that by myself. So into the fridge it went, and we had it that night. Now, you've got an impressive beer here, right? It's already special, but they put it in a ceramic bottle. 750-milliliter sturdy bottle with a flip top, so you can seal it if you don't finish it. And that's smart because you're talking about a barley wine here. 11% ABV beers, you probably won't sit and finish them by yourself if you're by yourself. So you might want to keep it capped, keep the oxygen off it, keep it cold. So I think it's a smart move to bottle a beer like this with the flip top. So I know that Rogue likes to call this the cognac of beers. And I'll tell you, you can certainly do that. It's incredibly complex. They use a trademark Pac-Man yeast, which Rick from Big Foamy Head is just crazy about. And now I know why. It finishes really clean. And I would say that it's got more character than the Chico strain, the WLP Chico strain, or the US 56 or the US 01 strains that they have. They're those really clean Sierra Nevada uses it. It's that kind of strain. The malts that they use in the beer make you realize that you can do a lot with flavor in a beer simply by trying a wider range of barley. Great Western Harrington, Klages, Munich, Hugh Baird Karastan. I mean, outside of Munich malt and Klages on one occasion, I've not seen or heard of the other ones. And what makes it spectacular is not just that, you know, all these malts are sweet and that's kind of the backbone of the beer, because you come to expect that from this style anyway, but the hops. Holy hell, the hops. You know, it wasn't until after we tasted a round of this beer that I checked the label. 110 IBUs. Now, those of you who know what that means, yeah. Right? That is way the hell up there. You can smell hops right away. Like, they're not even trying to hide that from you, and how could you at that rate? It smells of pine and grass. Centennial and Chinook are the two that they use. So you know they're not screwing around. And there had to be a ton of them in this beer. I mean, this was pretty heavy duty, but it was not a hop bomb. It's a thick beer, really chewy, tastes really sweet, almost like toffee or light chocolate. Very sweet. 11% alcohol, you'd think would be a scorcher on your throat or your chest. This wasn't at all. You know, some barley wines can be this way. And I think for the longest time, maybe it wasn't, you know, it was the reason I didn't gravitate toward them. And this masks everything. But the hops, of course. The hops are there. There's no hiding that. You can't get away from it. But that's the point. Rogue wants you to know that they used a lot in there. But it's not going to pucker your face, you know, make your face disappear. So if you do see this, buy it. It's an exceptional beer. It's an expensive beer. But it's worth it. It's a very thoughtful gift. Obviously, Reina Pfaff have great taste in everything. And I'll be adding beer to that list now because they've got good taste in that too, obviously. So I want to thank Reina Pfaff publicly for this, because for coming to our house and generally just being really good people, that's one thing. But only a true friend would lay something like this down at your feet and say, hey, you know, I thought you might like this. And I did, so thanks. Again, I don't know if this is seasonal, but if you do happen to see it, grab it. And it will age very well, too. So, you know, buy two of them. Age one and drink the other one. Okay, so Ludobites. Now, you might remember me talking about this guy, Chef Ludovic Lefebvre. He's the French chef from Top Chef Masters, and he's the guy that took the pig ear and made some kick-ass quesadillas out of them, and just barely lost to Chef Rick Bayless. He's badass, got a ton of tattoos, curses like a sailor, runs the kitchen like a sergeant in the army. Chicks dig him, he's a handsome guy, and he's very French, very French.
My name is Ludovic Lefebvre, and I'm the chef owner of Ludobite in Los Angeles.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Daria, we're gonna go, Daria.
I've become a chef, you know, very, very young, 24 years old, at L'Orangerie. I got 14 years old, I was working in the kitchen. And I'm lucky because I did my apprenticeship with Marc Menot, one of the biggest chef in France. I worked so hard in France, so hard, to be where I am now, you know.
Okay, we're gonna go to the gastro.
Ludo is French-born, French-trained. Worked with one of my favorite chefs ever, Pierre Gagnaire. He was named the world's 50 greatest chefs by Relais and Chateau. Yeah, he was nominated for James Beard Foundation Rising Star in 2001.
The chef in France, people have no idea how they're training in France. You have no idea. No, they really push you. You have so much pressure. Trust me, when I work with Alain Passard, I went home sometimes and I cry. And now I realize I take my cooking very personally. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, you remember that? Yeah, and he cursed a lot too, which was really cool.
Chefs, time's up, utensils down.
Oh, merde. I forgot to put tomato. I forgot to put that on the plate. I'm freaking out. I know what I'm going to lose. I know it.
Hey, we forgot to take that. We need to take that too.
The waiter did not take the red beets. Gazpacho. Well, why you don't take that? The gazpacho have so much flavor, the vanilla, the balsamic, the mustard was going to go with the beef.
Guys, seriously, I'm missing the beet juice on the plate, guys. It was you, my beet juice. Cindy played it for me.
I was freaking out. In the waiter, take my sauce after 4 minutes. I was just freaking out.
Every single thing's got to be in the container you want to take it in.
We're all trying to help Ludo.
I can pack things for you if you want.
Stay away from me. Leave me alone. Don't tell me how to cook.
30 seconds.
You know, I have 3 stars and I was in the bottom, you know. I need to come back strong, you know. I'm going to beat them with my quesadilla.
I like cursing. I mean, sometimes I curse on my show and I just want to bleep myself because I think it sounds cool. But here's what Ludo Bites is. Chef Ludo searched out this restaurant, the Bread Bar, in Los Angeles. It serves breakfast and it serves lunch, but it was closed for dinner. So once lunch was over, Ludo and his staff would move in. They brought their ingredients that Ludo was able to secure for the day. He had already designed a menu, and that changes from day to day, basically, you know, based on what he can get, and basically just serve dinner. He opened up the Bread Bar for dinner. Ludo was the chef, and I think there were, I'm thinking 25 tables would be really kind of pushing it. And the place was so busy that literally tables were turning around in anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes. It was madness. Ludo's French, and he cooks French, but he's got a modern take on a lot of the stuff that he makes, which we're going to talk about. What you order is a plate, which is almost like tapas style, kind of like it was at the bazaar. So you'd order a dish, and it would just come like a, you know, almost like a tapas size, not a lot of food, but, you know, just enough to have a taste. Bites, you see? Ludo Bites. It's a little taste of something, and the flavor is, it's just delicious. And you share everything with the table, and if you have a lot of people in your party, and you think you might want to, you know, have more, then order two of each, or just order a wide variety of things. I'm telling you this, nothing that he served fell flat. In regards to flavor, nothing was bad. I mean, there's classic home-style French, then you've got modern molecular gastronomy and the modern techniques, and right in the middle of this is this little lane, this superhighway where chefs like Ludo take classic French techniques and create modern dishes that kind of leave you speechless. You don't know how to describe them. So you go into a place like this with Joe, and you're immediately treated like a VIP because everybody knows her. She's easy to like anyway. And then they see her guests, and already you're given some kind of street cred because you're with her. So it was really nice. The minute we got there, his wife, Christy, who works as the maitre d' for the restaurant, is hugging Joe. She welcomes us. Really friendly, really warming, and pretty attractive. Turns out she was on The Apprentice, and she made it really deep, I think. I think it, like the final six or something. And turns out she's an attorney, she's really smart. She's got a firm here in L.A. She handles the Lakers, the AVP Pro Beach Volleyball Tour. She's got her stuff together. She's smart, and she loves Ludo. She supports Ludo. She loves to support Ludo's efforts, and I dig that. I love when a husband and wife team can work together and support each other. You know, your wife is into something, and she's passionate about it, you back her 110%, and vice versa. You know, if your husband's really into something, or your boyfriend is really into something, you support him. You know, I think that's what marriage is about, and what we're supposed to do. So when you see this, it's like, you know, she doesn't have to be at the restaurant. She's a lawyer. She's an attorney. No, she's there because she wants to support him. And that is great to see. It really is. Anyway, I'm posting a copy of the menu on the website from our evening. So on that day, you can see what's available the night that we had dinner. What gets me right away, and you'll notice this on the menu, is his approach to listing ingredients instead of giving dishes names. You know, he doesn't say chorizo soup with cantaloupe and cornichons. He says chorizo, cantaloupe, cornichon. That's it. If you like those things, order it. And when it comes and it's a soup, that's the surprise. Anyway, we had that, and it was so good, Katrina wanted to take a bath in it. It's chorizo soup, which I don't know if he just made a soup and flavored it with the chorizo, or if he put the chorizo in it and blended it and then strained it, but it tasted of chorizo, and it had cubes of cantaloupe in it. I mean, dude, what nut makes a soup out of spicy Spanish sausage? Seriously, only a dude would think of a dish like this. It's man food, but it's man food that girls like. You know, chicks dig this stuff. We had a lot of dishes, some I can't even remember, but I've got photos of everything, so there's a slideshow to go with the show. We had a sashimi dish, which is ahi from Hawaii, which I guess right now is really good on our coast. We're getting a lot of that. You know, all the sashimi I'm seeing is coming from Hawaii, and it's really popular. That was served with a spicy white chocolate sliver of that, and then some grilled peanuts in oil. Again, I'm telling you, these are ingredients that on paper, they don't look like they go together, but you have to taste them. This, it's visionaryism. That's what I called it. Is that, that's not a word, really. Visionaryism, is it? No. Anyway, he's a visionary. Spicy chocolate is really big in Spain, and it's big here, too. But, you know, that was one of those things where I didn't think I'd ever put chocolate and sashimi together. Anyway, another dish that seemed way too inventive and just bloody awesome, really good tuna, fresh tuna, you know, is right now from Hawaii, you just can't describe it. The way I described it, and the only way I can describe it, it's like biting into a pillow, a really soft, edible pillow that's been soaked in seawater. That's the only way I can describe that. A chef who serves this to you is someone who wants you to taste the best of what the sea has to offer right at this moment. Because next week, it could very well suck, and then he's not going to serve it to you. A dish we had that I honestly had a little reservation about, and I don't know why, is this. Veal tartare with oysters, avocado, almonds, lemon, and tonnato sauce. And if you wonder what tonnato sauce is, it's a dressing that's served, traditionally served with a dish just like this. It's made of mayonnaise, olive oil, tuna, anchovies, lemons, and capers. It's very sharp, tart. It complements a dish like this perfectly. But for some reason, eating veal tartare, I can't explain this. I had a tough time. I told Katrina I had a tough time. I don't have an issue eating veal. I don't have an issue with the way they're raised. I love veal. But eating it raw, man, I don't know why that bothered me a little bit. I struggled with it. It tasted fantastic. It did. I liked it. It tasted great. But Chef Ludo challenged me with this dish. And I think maybe that was his point, to challenge me as the eater. And it worked. For $12, I got an education, a food education on that dish. See, because the French love doing tartare. And only with a chef like Ludo, a real chef, can you trust to have something like this. And maybe this gets to the point of why you need to visit restaurants like this. And why I feel so lucky to have eaten his food. A top-tier chef, like Ludovic, is someone that you can trust. I would never think to eat the raw meat of a farm animal. But if a chef with status serves it to me and puts his reputation on the line for it, then I'm certainly going to eat it. And you know what? I'm glad I had it. I really did enjoy it. I just don't know why I felt a little sense of guilt about it. Maybe I should see a psychologist. Can you imagine? Imagine that conversation. Hey, doctor, you got a couple hours? Maybe you should lie down. That would not be pretty. Anyway, so Chef Ludo brings out something next. I swear to you, I could have eaten a whole truckload of this stuff, and I told him that too. He made boudin noir, but he made a mousse out of it. Now, you read my blog post on this a couple months ago, blood pudding. It's, you know, boudin noir. It depends on where you're having it, what they call it, but it's literally the same thing. When I had it, it was really good. But whatever magic Chef Ludo threw into the pot on this one put any form of blood pudding out the door. It was stellar. This was Wilt Chamberlain scoring 100 points against the Knicks. This was a perfect game. And then the pitcher hits a couple dingers during the game. It was the best thing I had all night. And I'll tell you, Katrina ate it. She did. I looked at her and I said, hey, you know, you're eating pork blood. She, you know, just to see if I can kind of gross her out a little bit. You know what she said? She goes, I know and I don't care. This is heavenly. Like, this is amazing. He served it with a potato puree, which is kind of like mashed potatoes, but it was a little runnier than that. Mustard and black currants, which are little sweet berries. Man, this was a homer. I'm telling you. Forget the name. Forget what it is. Eat it. It's French. It's good. It's Ludo. And I would think this might be his signature dish. And a dish that everyone at the table loved, and my new friend Noelle said was her favorite of the evening, was this creamy polenta with cheese that's served over braised oxtails and topped with a stock from the oxtails that's mixed with black truffle oil. Oh, man. Oh, Lord, this dish. If they'd served a larger serving of this, it would have sent us all to bed. Polenta is something that we all need to really start thinking of making more of. It's Italian version of grits, basically. It's Italian grits. But add cream and cheese, and you go right into the sin zone. Oh, it's just so good. And with the braised oxtails and the sauce on top, it's too much. Another great dish, lacquered pork belly with mustard ice cream. I know, mustard ice cream. I said the same thing. I went, what? A savory ice cream. I had only ever seen savory ice cream made on Iron Chef America. And the first time I'd ever tasted one was this. And I can tell you right now, it's just what the doctor ordered. This is one of those things that makes you think differently about food. So much so that I ended up thinking about it for a week. I made my very first savory ice cream recently with lobster. and that was due to this. It tasted like mustard, this ice cream that he made, but it wasn't hot like mustard, and it wasn't sweet. It was mustard and ice cream without the sugar. It was mustard and firm cream. I don't know how to explain that. And the lobster ice cream was the same thing. It was like firm cream and the flavor of lobster. Anyway, he had lacquered pork belly. Oh, crap. I mean, dude, anyone who says pork belly, well, that's gross. You know what? I got one word for that. Bacon. Where do you think bacon comes from? That's the belly of the pork. That's where all the flavor is. That's where pork flavor is born. We had our creme fraiche panna cotta with caramel and a cetra caviar. And I think I may have made the O face right in front of Ludo's wife on this one. So if she's listening, I apologize. These little balls of salty caviar. Man, I'm such a sucker for that stuff. I closed my eyes and went to fish egg nirvana. If only for a few seconds, man, I felt like I was underwater. It's the sea. It's the cornucopia of the sea. And to make panna cotta from creme fraiche, that's thinking a little out of the box. But to top it with caviar, that's selling your diners late. Check this out. I want you to come back someday. And they will, with a dish like that. And who wouldn't? So I'm approaching a food coma at some point. The last thing I remember having was a chocolate cupcake that's made with foie gras and maple syrup. Now, if I have to explain what this is like, you need an infusion. I mean, this man's crazy. And he comes out to see us like 9 times. And every time I'm like, dude, these dishes are insane. And he's so calm, just shakes his head. Because, yeah, he knows his stuff is good. Of course he does. He's a professional. He knows it's good, or he wouldn't put ingredients like that on the plate. He's got this thing wired. And I think what may challenge a chef like Ludo is that so many American diners now are challenged by food like this. You know, we need to open the doors a little bit. Let a chef like Ludo inside. Let him show you just what you really can tolerate. Katrina will be the first one to say it. These are doors that she never thought would open. And I can tell you, never would I have been able to get her to eat things like this. She trusts me in the kitchen, but a chef like Ludo, who puts himself on the line, that's where you leave yourself in the hands of. Let yourself go. Try it. Experiment. There's a whole world of food out there. You just need the right person to connect you to it. And that night, it was Ludo. Ludo was the French connection. He helped break down these barriers. Raw veal, oysters, pork belly, savory ice cream, caviar, a soup made from spicy Spanish sausage. These aren't things I could have ever served her. And she not only ate them, but she loved them. So thank you, Chef Ludo, man. That was a great meal. I've posted the menu from our meal, as well as a slideshow of photos on the website. Check him out at mylifeasafoodie.com. Now, what you won't see in the slideshow is the ambiance. You see these fancy dishes, really high-end ingredients, but you don't expect the ambiance. Laid back. They're playing Jay-Z, tons of rap music being piped in. The walls are covered with Ludo's artwork. He paints. And some of his paintings are just really unique. They're out there. The guy's really talented. And here's the best part. They don't have a wine list. So you only pay a corking fee and a cheap one. You bring your own beer or your fancy bottle of beer, bottle of wine, whatever you'd like to drink that evening, $5 for a corking fee. $5. They have to charge a corking fee. It's like the law or something. But dude, you can bring your own booze, enjoy it right there. That's like bringing the comfort of home right into the restaurant. It's very cool. Very laid back, unpretentious, and for L.A., man, L.A. is becoming a hot spot for me. I never used to go to L.A. to eat. Now I go there all the time. I love it. And that enhanced our experience, just having that laid back attitude. Now, where Chef Ludo opens next, anyone's guess, but you can keep up with him at ludolefreb.com. Go to my website. The spelling is kind of off, and I'll provide a link. Or just follow him on Twitter, at Chef Ludo. Okay, listen, before I continue with the rest of the show, I got to talk about something non-food related just for a second. Well, it's kind of food related because it has to do with Bourdain's No Reservations show. It's not really his show, but it's a commercial that ran on one of the breaks of his show on the Travel Channel. Now, I understand that you have to have advertising. And a lot of the ads that you see during commercial breaks, during No Reservations, are Travel Channel related. Plugs for other shows, previews of Samantha Brown, Andrew Zimmern, and a new sponsor of No Reservations now, which is this Bing.com. It's a new search engine. I don't know why anybody bothers making search engines. Google perfected it. Stop it already. But this ad ran right in the middle, and I was like, what the hell?
Is that what I think it is?
Yeah, it's new from Trojan. It's that vibrating touch that everyone's talking about.
Yeah, the little personal massager that goes right on the tip of your finger, huh?
Wow, it's so cute.
Yeah, my girlfriend has one and she's been raving about it for weeks. In fact, she told me that you could actually,
Oh, okay, I have definitely got to get one of these.
Yeah, you and me, though.
Does it say where you can get one?
Let's see. Relax, girls. You can get them right online.
That's where I got mine.
Finally, a personal massager that women aren't afraid to talk about from Trojan, a brand you know and trust. To learn more, go to vibratingtouch.com and hear what real women are saying.
It's so small and discreet, and it comes in this awesome little bag.
It's good for a relationship, let's put it that way.
To order for yourself or as a gift for just $19.99 with free shipping, go to vibratingtouch.com today.
No reservation.
I mean, seriously. I thought to myself, did I just see that? A condom company selling a personal massager for women. Right in prime time. 7 p.m. on the West Coast, kids. Excuse me, mommy's got to use the restroom. Be back in 15. Listen, I think it's great that Trojan's got the balls to make that ad. I think it's great that they make the product. I think it's great that Travel Channel bought it and sold it on Tony's show. I think all of that is great. I just didn't expect to see it on television, and I certainly didn't expect to see it right in the middle of a show that's mainly about food. But it tells me one thing. Obviously, Bourdain's demographic is a bunch of horny women, and for that, I like that dude even more. I raise my glass to you, Tony. What cracks me up is how they refer to these things as personal massagers. Come on, it's a vibrator. It fits on the end of your finger. That's made for one thing. And I love when they say it's so discreet. What's discreet about this? How discreet is it? You got your hand on your underpants. Can you imagine you're in your office trying to do your job? You're going over last year's financials. Let's see here. See? Wait a minute. What the hell is that? Is there a bee in here? It's like a carpenter beetle in here. I love it. So funny. Anyway, back to the food stuff, but I had to share that. Man, I was burning a hole in my head, and I had to bring it up because I found it hilarious. I love the Travel Channel. And, you know, do you think Food Network would ever purchase that ad and played it during a cook's tour? No. Bounty Picker Uppers. That's the kind of ad space they were selling on a cook's tour. Because, you know, Bourdain fans spill a lot of stuff, you know? I'm telling you something. If they're going to run this ad during Bourdain's show, they should be running similar ads for men during Giada De Laurentiis' show on Food Network. Because I'm telling you something, that most guys that watch Food Network, that watch her show, they're not watching it for the food, okay? I'm just saying.
CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and it's when the customer will pay in advance for a share of whatever the farm produces, and there can be vegetable or meat CSAs.
Go on, Topaz.
The day before delivery, we would pack up the CSA shares. So we have a list of our CSA members and how many shares of each size we need. And we use freezer bags to pack the shares into. We start by putting in a combination of low and high-end cuts. And we try to keep it balanced there and put in as many different types of species products as we can. So we try to give them chicken, beef, and pork if it's available.
We load up these bags with 10, 15, or 20 pounds each of meat products. We take them from the walk-in freezers out into the freezers that we have on our trailer. Those freezers are powered by a generator. We hop in the pickup. We drive to our first CSA drop point, which is in Lawrenceville, and that's about 2 hours from here.
By, you know, supporting CSAs, by supporting, you know, local farmers, you know, we are essentially voting to support, you know, the local economy.
Here's your large share.
Basically, all the meat we eat now comes from their farm, which really makes us happy because now we know where the animals come from, and at least the animals are treated humanely.
We kind of did a little taste comparison, just sort of a blind taste test with us, ourselves and some friends, but the stuff that we get from Liz and Tim is just tastes so much better.
You know, the customers want to talk and they want to see what's been going on the farm, and we love that time. I mean, the rest of the time we're pretty isolated out here, so I think we love being out with the customers. He's 5 weeks now, what?
Yeah, 5 weeks, good memory.
We love to get customers' feedback. We like to know how they're cooking the meat.
You want it with the skin on? It has the skin on.
The skin on, good.
Yeah. Job. If you want to compare the prices, is it as cheap as You know, the lowest priced chicken in a grocery store? You know, absolutely not. But with our prices and the prices of any sustainable farmer, you've got everything baked in. The cost of the environment, the cost of the healthcare system, the cost of producing that animal.
I definitely think that farmers should start CSAs because it keeps you connected with your customers.
The CSA model provides a good opportunity for farms that want to use sustainable practices to actually do well in the marketplace. CSA producers are at the smaller end of farms. They often are located around urban areas and so that they're close to concentrations of consumers who are interested in their products.
There you go, new grass. Anybody happy?
They generally also use a wide range of alternative production practices. Of course, that would depend on the products that are being sold.
This is how they're supposed to come out.
It's a different kind of agriculture, and I think it's primarily smaller farms, but many farms that have CSAs have you know, significant levels of annual sales, and people make a living at doing it. So they're not necessarily tiny operations.
There's a big burgeoning demand out there for local meat, for local food, for organic foods, and we'd like to see more farmers step up to fill that demand. You know, we're trying to do that, but we can never meet the demand that's out there just in our geography. We'd love to see more farmers try to do what we're doing.
You know, I catch a lot of crap from my beer safari friends for it, but I read GQ and Esquire magazine. I've been subscribing to these magazines since I was right out of college. And call me crazy, but I think they're far better alternatives for men's magazines than Maxim or Loaded or, God forbid, Playboy, which I think you kind of need to be under 25 to subscribe to that stuff without being considered like a total perv. Anyway, I don't give a crap what anyone thinks, but I've noticed more and more in the last year that these magazines have been including articles on food. Recipes, what men eat, how to make stuff, bachelor tips and tricks, things like that. And of course, to keep things cool, they don't get too serious, you know. They keep a safe distance. They make sure the ingredients aren't too feminine or less manly, so no one thinks that they're less of a man or anything for suggesting that you should know how to cook. But it's interesting and refreshing, actually, to see that these magazines are focusing more on food. And I think Men's Health is probably the best magazine for this because my friend Mark has made quite a few recipes from it, and they're actually very healthy and pretty tasty. However, even GQ and Esquire have it wrong because these are magazines that are trying to appeal to men who want to cook. And Esquire just featured the section called How Men Eat. And you want to know something? If you use this as a guide of what men eat, you'd think that men eat like shit. I mean, there isn't a recipe in here that doesn't feature meat and fat. Deep-fried Coca-Cola fried chicken, steaks, gravy, bacon, ham, hamburgers. I mean, seriously, Esquire, this is the best you can do. It's Heart Disease City. I mean, what? There's nobody. Look at the guys in this freaking magazine. You trying to tell me they eat this crap? No, these guys hardly eat at all. I mean, if you're a dude, the fact of the matter is, unless your magazine has the words outside or men's health on it, don't follow any food advice, unless you want to die early. This was a freaking debacle. I was really excited when I saw on the cover, I go, oh shit, they're going to do a whole food episode. No. I think they were stretching, try to earn some street cred with Maxim readers or something. But the only reason I'm bringing this whole thing up is that there's a section in there where they listed the chef survey. They asked 27 chefs, real ones, Thomas Keller, Rick Bayless, Alton Brown, Masaharu Morimoto. They asked him what the best fast food restaurant was. And you want to know who won? In-N-Out. Clearly, I was over the moon about this because I love In-N-Out. I do. That's my sinful place. You all know it. I love it. I have not hit it at any point during the show. Have I ever hid the fact that I love In-N-Out? I feel like if I'm going to cheat my heart out of a few extra pulses, I'm going to make it count. I'm going to make it In-N-Out. When my heart is squeezing those last few pulses out, it's going to say, Jesus, that In-N-Out. Nah, crap, it was worth it. They surveyed these chefs. They asked them when they last ate fast food, and 2 weeks prior, Thomas Keller had eaten In-N-Out by himself. Now, that's an endorsement. That's an endorsement. Thomas Keller eats In-N-Out. He said, fries well done, sprinkled with black pepper and ketchup, and a Diet Coke. It's the perfect example of classic American fast food. And as I've said before, I'm sure McDonald's was probably the classic example in the 50s before they got greedy and screwed everything up. Govan Armstrong said that Domino's was the pizza chain that decided America really needed pasta served in a bread bowl. Joey Campanero called Taco Bell an utter bastardization of one of the finest cuisines in the world. And according to Michael Schlow, McDonald's is the most consistent restaurant in the world, consistently bad, like leftovers from a hospital cafeteria. But, and this is the best, even Eric Ripper, he chimed in, he said that fast food is both evil and genius. It can feed a large number of people fairly decently at an affordable price, but the artificial flavors and ingredients are unacceptable. It's designed so that you can get back to work quickly. Not good. Now, if there's a quote that I can stand behind 100%, it's that one right there from Eric Ripper. We have become a nation obsessed with our work, a nation of worker bees. Why? For what? I mean, yes, listen, right now you're lucky if you have a job. And if you do, that job's important. But we're not enjoying our lives at all. We're sacrificing food to facilitate our hardcore work ethic. Really, we are. Fast food is teaching us that food is not important. And this is why I don't like it. Now, I'm getting back to this. Work is important. It really is. Our jobs are important. And you should be very good at it. You should concentrate on your job. You should do your job. But this whole thing about eating lunch quickly and getting back to work, that's bullshit. Keep the lunch break short, fuel up, get back to work. Because when you're lying on your deathbed, you can think back at all the work you did, not the life you led. You can think about all the paper you pushed, all the menial tasks that you performed. You met the company's bottom line, and the price you paid was that quick lunch or working through dinner or eating at your desk. I'm not saying work isn't important, because it is. All right, we have to work to put food on our tables. Our jobs are important. Our companies are important. It pays the bills. But we should never sacrifice that 1 hour during our day that we have to share with work for work. It's the one meal that occurs during the day that happens while we work. And work's important, but it's not more important than that 1 hour that you need to get your head together. And food helps that. Work is important, but it's not more important than you. You're far more important than your job. It doesn't define you. It never will. Only you define you, and in a lot of ways, our food defines us. Because what we put into our bodies is kind of a reflection of what we think of ourselves. And this was even something that was said on an episode of Cook's Tour. He went to Jamaica, and everything they cooked was healthy. And he says, you know, you put crap on your body, you think crap. You put in healthy food in your body, you think healthy. It was really simple, but it made a lot of sense. If you think poorly of yourself, go ahead, eat the fast food. Otherwise, you make wiser choices.
It's the Onion Radio News. Two new Burger King sandwiches negate each other. This is Doyle Redland reporting. In a gala ceremony at its Miami, Indiana headquarters, the Burger King Corporation rolled out two new sandwiches that could, in theory, negate each other. Burger King Vice President Robert Fass had high praise for the potentially unstable combination.
The new veggie burger is a refreshing, heart-smart alternative to the usual fast food junk. And brace yourself, meat lovers. The new BK Hickory Triple Stack and three juicy big beef patties slathered in a rich smoked cheddar sauce is going to blow you away.
Burger theorists. Politicians, however, are warning that the two sandwiches could, if sold in a single order, destroy each other. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News.
Hey, I have to tell you, man, Top Chef Season 6 may be one of the most entertaining in a while. The Fantasia brothers make it interesting. I mean, at first it's all about Chef Michael, right? Because I met the guy, I liked him, I liked his food, and he was really nice to Joe. But then you start watching the show, you see his brother Brian, and you're like, all right, I see the brotherly competition here. And there's some cooking genes in this Fantasia pool. I mean, I think Brian may have one up on his brother because he's older, he's been doing it longer. But they're bringing the best out of each other, they really are. I mean, you look now, the early versions or the early episodes of Top Chef, within the first 3-4 episodes, you start to kind of get the dynamic. You know what everyone's about, and you know what the season has to offer. You've got the brothers.
What's your name?
Michael.
Michael what?
Nice to meet you.
I realize that Michael and Brian are brothers, so I'm kind of like, whoa, like, what's that all about? Like, I'll be interested to see what they're like when we get in the kitchen.
Where'd you fly?
I flew in Vegas and stayed at Mom's last night and had dinner without you. I decided to become a chef because Brian was doing it, and I sort of got into it and I never got out. I mean, Brian and I right now live 3,000 miles away from each other. It seems that we're going to be seeing each other a lot more.
It's the first time that we've lived together in, what, 12 years?
Brian is a little more conservative than I am. I think I'm a little bit more likely to take some risks.
And they're cool when they're not competing against each other.
So I'm watching my brother cook. Yeah, I want to see him do well. Unless I'm competing directly against him, I'm his biggest fan.
But you know, you can tell this is going to get rough when the shit hits the fan because these guys live across the country from each other. They don't see each other all the time. And there's this brotherly competition here that I think could get really ugly.
My ultimate goal is to win Top Chef, obviously, but also opportunity to cook against my brother. I think my mom wants us to make sure that we don't lose touch of our relationship. But when you're in a competition and you're a chef, you gotta set that aside.
And of course, there are other dynamics going on. You've got chauvinism.
I look next to me and Jennifer has like the same amount of clams, and I'm like, I'm doing something wrong. There's no way, no offense, but there's a girl shouldn't be at the same level that I am.
And no season of Top Chef wouldn't be complete without some gay issues.
I'm gay, so I had some, like, personal feelings about the challenge. I am looking forward to the day when everyone is allowed to get married. I find it beyond comprehension, making us go do, like, effectively a wedding challenge when, like, at least three of us on the challenge aren't allowed in that institution.
I understand. I feel ya. I definitely agree with her, and quite honestly, I feel kind of lame that I'm not more fired up about it because I've been with my partner for 13 years.
We're in Vegas. I know it's coming, you know? I know we're going to do a wedding challenge or something, and I don't really feel that good about it.
I understand why she's pissed off, but this is the world we live in today.
If you haven't been keeping up, Top Chef on Bravo, Wednesday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, bravotv.com. They replay it all week, so if you miss it, you can always catch it. Come for the Padma, stay for the Vitagia brothers. I'm telling you right now, they could be in the final together. Oh, and I have to mention this too. Jo has this new website she started called chefswhotweet.com. If you like to follow chefs, and not just celebrity chefs, but all chefs, you've got to check out Chefs Who Tweet. It's a huge list of professional chefs on Twitter. You can follow them. You can visit their websites. It's like a big, giant database. It's one big site where all this information is stored. And Joe's the perfect person to do this. If you want to follow chefs, chefswhotweet.com. It's fantastic. And that's it. Thanks for tuning in yet again. Thanks to CNN and Bravo for the audio clips. Music in this episode from Crystal Method. It's from an album called Drive. And it's the first album designed for the Nike Plus system, where you can actually use your shoes and your iPod to monitor your workouts and your runs. So buy the album in the iTunes store and get this Nike Plus system in your shoes and your iPod. Listen, it's changed the way I work out. Believe me, I'm addicted to it now because I can follow everything. I can follow every inch that I run, every calorie that I'm burning, and I can keep my progress. You can go to NikePlus.com and follow your progress. You can set goals for yourself. It's great. Check for links on our website at MyLifeAsAFoodie.com. Next episode, all about lobster. All right, so get your bibs ready because it's going to get messy. My name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. Ciao.